I told the girl nothing about it and she did not hear the child, but as soon as my husband came to dinner I told him. After that we talked freely of the matter to several of our friends. Little Ray knew nothing of death. We had never spoken of it to him in any way. The last time I took him to the baby's grave, shortly before he was taken sick, we were sitting by the grave, and I thought, oh, if I could only take baby up and look at it for just 1 minute, I would feel so glad. Instantly Ray said to me, Mama, let us take baby up and look at it just 1 minute, then we will feel better. Just as we were leaving the grave he smoothed it with his little hand, and said, Ray is going to lie down and sleep right here beside little brother, but you must not cry, Mama. He is now lying just where he said he would. P.S. I wish to say that I have never known much of what is called modem spiritualism, but was born and reared a Presbyterian and still belong to that church, of which I am an active member. F. H. Dr. Hodgson also wrote to Mr. H., who replied as follows, February 27, 1895. I can truly say that my wife related it, that is, about Ray seeing baby in the chair, to me the day it occurred when I came to dinner. I frequently heard our little boy tell his mama that the baby called him all the time. W. H. H. The following corroboration was also received by Dr. Hodgson, 116 Summit Street, Defiance, Ohio, February 25, 1895. Dear Sir, I can truly say that Mrs. and Mr. H. often spoke to me of Ray seeing the baby in the chair before he took sick. They told me the next day after it happened. Mrs. J. H. Shelters. The following case was given by Dr. Paul Edwards, and was published in the journal Light for April, 1906, while living in a country town in California, USA, about the year 1887. I was called upon to visit a very dear lady friend who was very low and weak from consumption. Everyone knew that this pure and noble wife and mother was doomed to die, and at last she herself became convinced that immediate death was inevitable, and accordingly she prepared for the event. Calling her children to her bedside she kissed each in turn, sending them away as soon as goodbye was said. Then came the husband's turn to step up and bid farewell to a most loving wife, who was perfectly clear in her mind. She began by saying Newton, for that was his Christian name. Do not weep over me, for I am without pain and am wholly serene. I love you upon earth, and shall love you after I have gone. I am fully resolved to come to you if such a thing is possible, and if it is not possible I will watch you and the children from heaven, where I will be waiting when you all come. My first desire now is to go. I see people moving all in white. The music is strangely enchanting. Oh! Here is Sadie, she is with me and she knows who I am. Sadie was a little girl she had lost about 10 years before, Sissy, said the husband. You are out of your mind. Oh, dear. Why did you call me here again? Said the wife. Now it will be hard for me to go away again. I was so pleased while three, it was so delightful, so soothing. In about 3 minutes the dying woman added, I am going away again and will not come back to you even if you call me. This scene lasted for about 8 minutes. And it was very plain that the dying wife was in full view of the two worlds at the same time, for she described how the moving figures looked in the world beyond, as she directed her words to mortals in this world. I think that of all my death scenes this was the most impressive, the most solemn. My friend Miss Dallas has sent me some cases of visions of the dying which occurred to persons she knew. In one case the face of her friend's mother, just before death, suddenly lighted up with an intense brilliancy. When this had passed away the dying woman opened her eyes and said that she had looked into heaven, and had seen many people they knew who had passed over, and also that many of the things she had seen it was impossible to describe. Shortly after this she died. In another case Ms. Dallas tells of a widow living with her youngest surviving son, Jim, then dying of consumption. Ms. Dallas visited the mother shortly after her son's death, and recorded the following in her notebook the same day. Jim had died on a Thursday, And on the previous Sunday his end appeared to be near, but he revived, and told his mother that he had seen something beautiful. Again he had a relapse, and on reviving he said he had seen two of his sisters and a brother who had died previously, but he added, "Mother, I cannot find Bessie." His mother told Ms. Dallas that Bessie had died 12 years before, when Jim was still a child. Not long after this, Jim died. The following case is taken from the Journal of the American SPR for July, 1909, p. 422. The editor, Professor Hislop, relates how the original letter came into his possession, and remarks that it may be taken as documentary evidence of the incident narrated. The original letter was enclosed in one addressed to the editor of The Open Court, a well-known American periodical. In it the writer, Mr. William C. Church, states that the letter he forwards was written to the late Captain J. Erickson, inventor of the Monitor, by Lady Ellen Chute, a relative of his wife, and concerns the death of Erickson's sister-in-law, Louisa Browning. The Amelia referred to in the letter was the wife of Captain Erickson, who had died in July, 1867, many years previously, and Aunt Louisa Browning was the sister of Amelia. Bracknell, Berks, November 5, 1883. Dear Captain Erickson, since I last wrote to you, our fond aunt, Louisa Browning, died on Sunday morning, October 28, at the age of 78. On her deathbed she appeared to see her deeply loved sister, Captain Erickson's wife, Amelia, who had gone before. Those watching by her heard her say, though she had before been quite unconscious, "Oh, Amelia, Amelia." And she reached out her hand to welcome someone their earthly eyes were not permitted to see, and then all was over. Yours very sincerely, signed, Ellen Chute. In the case one here abridged, the singing and voice of the unseen visitant were heard by the mother as well as by her dying child, and a cousin of the deceased child appears to have had a vision of the child and heard a premonitory intimation of her death. Mrs. G., with her two little girls, Minnie and Ada, of the respective ages of 8 and 9 years, had been staying in the country on a visit to her sister-in-law, but having taken a house near London, she sent the two children with their nurse off by an early train, following herself by one a few hours later. Towards the evening of the same day, one of the little girls walked into the room of the house which they had quitted in the morning, where a cousin to whom she was much attached was sitting at his studies, and said to him, "I am come to say goodbye, Walter, I shall never see you again." Then kissing him she vanished from the room. The young man was greatly startled and astonished, as he had himself seen both the little girls and their nurse off by the morning train. At this very time of the evening both the children in London were taken suddenly W, while playing in their new home, a few hours after they had arrived. The doctor called in pronounced their complaint to be smallpox of the most malignant kind. They both died within the week, but the youngest, Minnie, died first. The day after she was buried, the poor bereaved mother was anxiously watching the last hours of the one still left, for whom she well knew no chance of life remained. Suddenly the sick child woke up from a kind of stupor, and exclaimed, "Oh, look, Mama, look at the beautiful angels," pointing to the foot of the bed. Mrs. G. saw nothing, but heard soft sweet music, which seemed to float in the air. Again the child exclaimed, "Oh, dear Mama, there is Minnie. She has come for me." She smiled and appeared greatly pleased. At this moment Mrs. G. distinctly heard a voice say, "Come, dear Ada, I am waiting for you." The sick child smiled once again and died without a struggle. Sometime before their death the poor mother overheard a childish conversation between the two little ones, in which the youngest, Minnie, said to the other that she felt sure she should die first, and would be certain to come and fetch her sister. This conversation was long remembered by the mother, as it was strikingly confirmed by the actual facts. It is, of course, possible that expectancy on the part of the mother, if at the time she recalled her children's conversation, may discount the evidential value of this striking case. It has been recorded of the celebrated mathematician, Professor De Morgan, that during the last 2 days of his life there were indications of his passing through the experience which he had himself considered worthy of investigation and of record. He seemed to recognize all those of his family whom he had lost, his three children, his mother and sister, whom he greeted, naming them in the reverse order to that in which they left the world. No one seeing him at that moment could doubt that what he seemed to perceive was, to him at least, visible and real. Mrs. De Morgan, in her book, From Matter to Spirit, relates the following incident, which she gives as it was told by the mother of the dying child. On the morning on which John died, having bade all the family farewell, he lay for some time quite quiet, and then he spoke, his voice sounding strong and clear, and was evidently replying to some question which he had heard asked. We were astonished and awestruck. We felt that he saw and heard an angel invisible to us. Then he spoke again and said, Mother, here is grandmother come. You must see her, and she is with such a great company, and they say that they are come to take me away with them. Soon after that he gently breathed his last. The Reverend W. G. Horder relates the following incident, and says, A friend of mine, of a mind naturally indisposed to faith, and at the time quite skeptical about a future life, tells me of the following incident, which made a deep impression upon him, and even wakened belief in immortality. His brother, a young man of about 25 years of age, had been seized with brain fever, which at last rendered him quite unconscious for about 24 hours, but just before death he raised himself in his bed, resting himself upon his hand and said, Who is that at the bottom of my bed? His mother, who was sitting by his bedside, said, There is no one there, my dear. He said, Don't you see Emma, a departed sister, standing at the foot of the bed? She said, No, there is no one there, my dear. Yes, there is, he said, it is Emma. I am coming, I am ready, and fell back and died. The following three cases were sent to me by Mrs. Shepherd Munn, widow of the late Vicar of Alton, Brimfield, Herefordshire, to whom all the people concerned in the narratives were known personally. She writes as follows, A young boy, aged 14, named Charles Dyer, who lived with his parents at Alton, was dying of consumption, and had wasted away very rapidly in 4 or 5 months. During the whole of that period he was very bright, full of interest in all around, and did not seem to be aware of his rapidly failing strength. About a week before he died he slept in a room off his mother's, with no door between he called her, and when she went in, he was full of excitement about a door he could see at the corner of his room, which he said was opening wider and wider, and when it is opened wide I shall be going through it, mother. On the morning of the day he died, his mother having left the room to fetch him something, heard him call and hastening back, found him sitting up in bed, looking towards the corner of the room, and he said to her, There is a nice old man come for me, he is holding out his arms for me. I must go. Don't fret, mother, and he fell back gently on his pillow and was gone, without any struggle for breath, and with a smile of joy on his face, which remained. His mother was full of ecstasy, and came down to the vicarage that same morning to tell me of it. The impression this experience made upon her has continued to the present day, and has influenced her life for the better. The following case, also related to me by Mrs. Shepherd Munn, took place some years previous to the last, but is connected with the same family. An old man, named John George, grandfather of the consumptive boy, Charles Dyer, already referred to, lay dying. He and his wife, Mary and George, had had a great sorrow that same year in the death of their youngest son, Tom, a young man who had been killed on the railway line on which he worked. The dying man had been quiet for some time as though sleeping, when he suddenly looked up, opened his eyes wide, and looking at the side of the bed opposite to where his wife was, exclaimed, Why, mother, here is Tom, and he is all right, no marks on him. Oh, he looks fine. Then after another silence he said, And here's Nance too. A pause, then mother, she is all right. She has been forgiven. And very soon after he passed away, taking with him a sorrow which had long pressed upon the mother's heart, for Nance had fallen into sin, and had died soon after the child was born, and as the poor mother thought never having had time to repent. The next case is also given by Mrs. Shepherd Munn, and it also, like the two preceding cases, occurred in Alton, Herefordshire. A woman, named Mary Wilding, was dying of cancer. She was passionately fond of her husband, Charles Wilding. They had worked together, brought up their children, saved some money, and bought a nice little house in Alton, where they spent some comfortable and happy years together. When she realized that she would die and leave Charlie, she became very unhappy and made them all very miserable by fretting and constantly complaining of her fate. One day as the end drew near, when a sister of hers, who was helping to look after her, happened to be alone in the room with Mary Wilding, she suddenly looked up with such a bright expression of face and said, "Oh, Emmy, mother is here, she has come for me, and is going to take me with her." She never lost the feeling of confidential joy, and passed away the day after quite peacefully. Dr. Hislop narrates the following case, which he received from a friend whose testimony he had no reason to question. "I called this afternoon, May 14, 1906, upon a lady whose child, a boy of 9 years old, had died 2 weeks previously. He had been operated upon for appendicitis some 2 or 3 years ago, and had had peritonitis at the same time. He recovered and was apparently quite well for a time. Again he was taken ill, and was taken to hospital and operated upon. He was perfectly rational, recognizing his parents, the doctor and the nurse after recovering from under the influence of the anesthetic. Feeling that he was going, he asked his mother to hold his hands until he should be gone. Soon he looked up and said, 'Mother, dear, don't you see little sister over there?' 'No, where is she?' 'Right over there. She is looking at me.' Then the mother, to pacify him, said she saw the child. In a few minutes his face lighted up full of smiles, and he said, 'There comes Mrs. W., a lady of whom he was very fond, who had died nearly 2 years before, and she is smiling just as she used to. She is smiling and wants me to come.' In a few moments he said, 'There is Roy. I'm going to them. I don't want to leave you, but you'll come to me soon, won't you? Open the door and let them in. They are waiting outside.' And he was gone." The mother confirms this narrative, and inquiry brings out the following facts. The little sister he refers to had died 4 years before his own birth. Roy is the name of a friend of the child, who had died about a year previous. The following case is taken from the life of the Reverend Whitel Moody, the celebrated evangelical preacher of the United States. The last moments of Mr. Moody are described by his son, the biographer, as follows. "Suddenly he murmured, 'Earth recedes, heaven opens up before me. I have been beyond the gates. God is calling. Don't call me back. It is beautiful. It is like a trance. If this is death, it is sweet.' Then his face lit up and he said in a voice of joyful rapture, 'Dwight, Irene, I see the children's faces,'" referring to his two little grandchildren, who had gone before. Turning to his wife he said, "Mama, you have been a good wife to me," and with that he became unconscious. The following case is related by Mr. Alfred Smedley in his book of reminiscences. He gives an account of his wife's last moments, and states, "A short time before her decease, her eyes being fixed on something that seemed to fill her with pleasant surprise, she exclaimed, 'Why, there is Sister Charlotte here, and mother and father, and brother John and Sister Mary. And now they have brought Bessie Heap. They are all here. Oh, how beautiful. Cannot you see them?' she asked. 'No, my dear, I very much wish I could,' I answered. 'Cannot you see them?' she again asked in surprise. 'Why, they are all here, and they are come to bear me away with them.' Then she added, 'Part of our family have crossed the flood, and soon the other part will be gathered home, and then we shall be a family complete in heaven.'" I may explain here that Bessie Heap had been the trusted family nurse, and my wife had always been a favorite with her. After the above ecstatic experience, my wife lingered for some time. Then fixing her gaze steadily upward again, and lifting up her hands, She joined the convoy of angel friends, who had come to usher her into that brighter spiritual world of which we had learned so little. The next case one is given on the authority of Dr. Wilson of New York, who was present at the death a few years ago of the well-known American tenor, Mr. James Moore, who was a patient of his. Dr. Wilson gives the following narrative. It was about 4 o'clock, and the dawn for which he had been watching was creeping in through the shutters, when, as I bent over the bed, I noticed that his face was quite calm and his eyes clear. The poor fellow looked up into my face, and taking my hand in both of his, he said, "You've been a good friend to me, Doctor. You've stood by me." Then something which I shall never forget to my dying day happened, something which is utterly indescribable. While he appeared perfectly rational and as sane as any man I have ever seen, the only way that I can express it is that he was transported into another world, and although I cannot satisfactorily explain the matter to myself, I am fully convinced that he had entered the Golden City, for he said in a stronger voice than he had used since I had attended him, "There is Mother. Why, Mother, have you come here to see me?" "No, no, I'm coming to see you. Just wait, Mother, I am almost over, I can jump it. Wait, Mother." On his face there was a look of inexpressible happiness, and the way in which he said the words impressed me as I have never been before. And I am as firmly convinced that he saw and talked with his mother as I am that I am sitting here. In order to preserve what I believed to be his conversation with his mother, and also to have a record of the strangest happening of my life, I immediately wrote down every word he had said. His was one of the most beautiful deaths I have ever seen. My friend, Mrs. Carter, of Street Earth, Hale, Cornwall, sends me the following case, which occurred on April 13, 1924, when she was present, and she wrote the following notes a few days later. She says, "On Sunday, April 13, I went to Hillside to sit with a Mr. Williams, who was dying of consumption, so that those belonging to him might have a little rest. He was in a state of great physical distress, and unable to lie down, and could only breathe with the greatest difficulty, with his head leaning down to within a few inches of the mattress. He suddenly raised himself and stretched out his hands, and said very clearly, as though speaking to someone present and whom he was glad to see, 'Edmund. My dear brother Edmund.' I was alone with him at the time, but when the family returned to the room later I at once related to them what he had said, and then learned from them that his brother Edmund was dead. During the time that I was with him from 3.15 to 9.15, although breathing very heavily all the time, he appeared to be quite conscious when he spoke, and called for the different members of his family. He knew me quite well, and kissed my hand and called me by my name. He also asked to have water at intervals, and asked for hot tea. In spite of his great bodily distress, his trust in God remained quite unshaken, and it was very moving to hear him say at intervals, 'Dear Lord, let me go.' I was told that before I arrived he had exclaimed, 'Mrs. Hooper.' She had been a great friend of his, and died here about 18 months or 2 years ago. He died about 10 hours after I had left. The following account of the last days of a little child was published in the Journal of the American SPR, edited by Dr. James H. Hislop, Volume 12. Number 6, and a considerably abridged report was compiled by Miss H. A. Dallas 1, a summary of which is given below. 1. See the Nurseries of Heaven, Vale Owen and Dallas. London, 1920, p. 117. Daisy Irene Dryden was born in Marysville, Yuba County, California, on September 9, 1854. She died in San Jose, California, on October 8, 1864, aged 10 years and 29 days. Her mother writes, "In the summer of 1864 Daisy was attacked by bilious fever. After 5 weeks of illness the fever left her, and for 2 weeks she seemed to continue to gain strength. She smiled and sang and seemed like herself again, until one afternoon, as her father sat by her bed, he noticed a singular expression on her face. It was one of both pleasure and amazement. Her eyes were directed to one place above the door. Her father asked, "Daisy, what is it? What do you see?" She replied softly, "It is a spirit, it is Jesus. And he says I am going to be one of his little lambs." "Yes, dear," said her father, "I hope you are one of his lambs." "Oh, Papa," she exclaimed, "I am going to heaven, to him." That night she was taken with enteritis and only lived 4 days. She suffered much for the first 24 hours, being unable to retain food, water or medicine. From that time on she had very little pain. Her poor little body had in fact become so attenuated that there was little left for the disease to work upon. But her mind was very active and remarkably clear. Her faculties appeared sharpened. She could remember recitations she had learned in school, always having been fond of memorizing poetry. And when Lulu sang to her from the Sunday school hymnal, she would give the name of the song and the page on which to find it. She loved to have us read the scriptures to her. "I read, in John 14, it is expedient for you that I go away, for if I go not away the Comforter will not come unto you, but if I depart I will send him unto you." At this she looked up to me so heavenly as she said, "Mama, when I go away the Comforter will come to you, and maybe he will let me come too sometimes, I'll ask Ali about it." She often said this after this time, when she felt uncertain about anything. Ali was her brother who had passed to the other life at the age of 6, of scarlet fever, 7 months before. He seemed to be with her a great deal of the time during those last 3 days, because when we asked her questions which she could not answer she would say, "Wait till Ali comes, and I will ask him." On this occasion she waited only a short time and then said, "Ali says I may go to you sometimes. He says it is possible, but you will not know when I am there, but I can speak to your thought." As I have said, Daisy lingered on the borderland for 3 days, after the first agonizing 24 hours had passed. Her physical frame had become so emaciated that there was only enough to hold the spirit in its feeble embrace, and it was manifested to us, as it were, through the thin veil of the attenuated flesh which enwrapped it. During this time she dwelt in both worlds, as she expressed it. 2 days before she left us, the Sunday school superintendent came to see her. She talked very freely about going, and sent a message by him to the Sunday school. When he was about to leave, he said, "Well, Daisy, you will soon be over the dark river." After he had gone, she asked her father what he meant by the dark river. He tried to explain it, but she said, "It is all a mistake. There is no river, there is no curtain. There is not even a line that separates this life from the other life." And she stretched out her little hands from the bed, and with a gesture said, "It is here and it is there. I know it is so, for I can see you all, and I see them there at the same time." We asked her to tell us something of that other world and how it looked to her, but she said, "I cannot describe it, it is so different, I could not make you understand." One morning while I was in the room, putting it in order, Mrs. W., one of our kind neighbors, was reading to her these words from the Testament, "Let not your heart be troubled. In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you." John 14, 1, 2. Daisy remarked, "Mansions, that means houses. I don't see real houses there, but there is what would be places to meet each other in. Ali speaks of going to such and such a place, but says nothing of houses. You see, perhaps the Testament tells about mansions so we will feel we are going to have a home in heaven, and perhaps when I get there I'll find a home. And if I do, the heavenly flowers and trees that I love so much here, for I do see them, and that they are more beautiful than anything you could imagine, they will be there." I said, "Daisy, don't you know the Bible speaks of heaven being a beautiful city?" She said, "I do not see a city," and a puzzled look came over her face, and she said, "I do not know, I may have to go the first." Mrs. W., a kind neighbor, the one who had read of the mansions to Daisy, and who was with us a great deal, told Mrs. B., a neighbor of hers, about Daisy's inner sight being open. Mrs. B. was a lady who did not believe in a future state. She was, moreover, in deep distress, having just lost her husband and a son who was about 12 years old, named Bateman. She came with Mrs. W. one evening, and, sitting beside the bed, began to ask questions.